Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Today on the show, actor, comedian, and director, Dave Foley.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Welcome, everyone, to another very exciting episode of Somewhere in the Skies. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but for the very first time on the show exclusively, we have with us today Dave Foley. Dave, how you doing, my man?
I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's a delight. I guess the long time listener, first time guest, I guess.
I'm extremely honored, man. I did feature you a panel that I did with you and Jeremy Corbell and UFO Jane on the show at one point, but this is the first time you've actually been my guest. And of course, I had to have my co-pilot here, a fellow Canadian like yourself.
Yeah, to come on here. I've been enjoying your new collaboration.
You guys,
you're the Nichols and May of UFOs.
We're trying.
Good to see you, Jane.
Nice to see you.
Christy's definitely brought. She came guns a-blazing. I mean, she was the one to get me Elizondo and Chris Mellon after their big article came out.
Yeah, and that was a great interview. That was great.
Oh, it was. So we have her to thank for that. We just dropped another big story, an exclusive interview about Canadian UFO files, which I want to get your thoughts on too.
Oh, Dave, I saw that. I didn't get a chance to read that. I was going to go.
Oh, no
that.
Worries. We but, can definitely give you the Cliff Notes version, but let's do the origin story for our viewers, our listeners who don't really know. I don't know how they couldn't know who you are, but your dive into the world of UFOs. How did this start? How'd you first get interested? What made you start to take it seriously?
Yeah, well, I think it's been less of a dive into, is more more of a fluctuating obsession throughout my lifetime, I would say, where I guess, as a kid, I was definitely very interested in UFO. I mean, I was a child, the TV series UFO was on the air. Terrible show, by the way, by the guys who made Thunderbirds or Go, their first live action show. And if you watch it now, it's fantastic wardrobe. But other than that, it's pretty awful.
And
there was also the Roy Thinnes series Invaders was on at the time, so it was all, you know, and I loved all the sci-fi movies like Day of the Earth Stood Still. I loved the sort of utopian vision of aliens. Of course, a child, big reader of Ray Bradbury as a kid, so all those things were interesting. But it came in terms of seriousness and attentiveness. It's gone up and down, and it took a big jump up around the time of the Phoenix Lights.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that was when, before that, I mean, I never bought the Roswell story, the cover-up story, but when the Phoenix Lights happened back in 97, I think it was, that was one where I just kept looking at it and then heard the ridiculous, you know, it was Flair's explanation. And again, how quickly, you go back to Roswell, where basically you could just say, you know, it was a balloon, and people go, oh, yes, the only nuclear wing in the world would mistake a balloon for a UFO.
Right.
everyone have a nap now. And so the Phoenix Lights seemed like exactly the same thing, where, you know, the government comes out and says it was flares, and all the media who were covering it a day before go, no, I knew it. So that got me thinking, oh, this is ridiculous. And I guess, and just after that, the French Cometa report came out.
Oh, right.
Which was the French government's, it was a joint thing. It was the military, science, academy, and government all working on a report on UFOs. And at the end, they just came out and said to the whole world, oh, the UFOs are real. And our best bet is they're extraterrestrial. And again, this is a pretty established Western government, saying this, strong, scientific nation. And again, no one cared,
Right. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they shut down Cometa after they came out with that conclusion?
I'm not sure if they did. I don't know now. I think it was within
months or something. They said, yeah most possibly the most, what would you say, the biggest answer to it is probably extraterrestrial. And then they're like, nope, program over, done.
Yeah. Well, they got their result.
Yeah,
exactly.
Arguably, that's what you do with a program. They get their result and you shut it down. But you think you'd follow it up with some other studies. And I'm going to assume they have, right. I mean, I do think the French have a better sort of reporting system than we've had. I don't know if it's still extant, but so those are the things that was got me really going on again. And then, years later, watching Out of the Blue, James Fox's movie. Mm-hmm. I remember watching that, and that was the first, I think it was the first really good documentary about the subject, because it was very well produced, and it was dealing almost entirely with extremely, what's the term? Not unimpeachable. Credible, mostly dealing with extremely credible sources and witnesses, and looking at data. And I thought that was like the first really great, and that one really just that, and then watching the follow up, I Know What I Saw, sort of went, okay, all right, this is, I gotta take, this is a pretty serious issue for our time.
Yeah. Right. And then, I mean, were you one of these people too when the whole New York Times thing came out and everything? Were you all in at that point, or were you kind of with the rest of us like, huh, what's going on here?
Oh, I was all in. In fact, I was in enough that when the New York Times story came out, I knew what was being left out of it. I knew from some of my friends about OSAP, and knew that
you were in the know.
Yeah, and knew that knew that the larger program was OSAP, and that ATIP was just sort of an offshoot of OSAP within the Pentagon. So I knew the things that recently everyone's going, well, we should have we weren't told the truth by the New York Times. I mean, I knew that they just weren't able to tell it at the time because the head of OSAP hadn't agreed to go public yet.
How did you surround yourself then within the UFO community, Dave? Like, how did you like find yourself like embedded in this group of people that now have all this intel, right?
Yeah.
Like all this intel, because it's, we all find our way in different ways outside of being interested in it. You find yourself into surrounded by people in the community.
Well, it started because I was going to do it. I was going to go on my friend Joe Rogan's podcast to promote my own podcast. And I remember texting Joe late at night saying, Joe, you're going to be so excited. I'm full on into UFOs again. And I was startled to get the text back from Joe. Ah, it's all bullshit. I'm out of that.
Right.
What the fuck? How can you be out of it now? And that's one of the things where I started talking to him about, I talked about James Fox's movies. And I also said, you should watch, the Bob Lazar documentary by this guy Jeremy Corbell, and it said there's a lot of really interesting, compelling stuff in that. And then after I mentioned Jeremy's movie, Jeremy gave me a shout on Twitter, and so we became Twitter friends, and then we became real life friends a little later. I remember staying out in Joshua Tree and reached, sort of tweeted at Jeremy saying, look, I'm out in your end of the world. What should I do when I'm out here? Because he used to live out in Joshua Tree. So that was, yeah. So we became friends over just like, you know, telling me what restaurants and what tour sites to see. And then we actually started meeting up and talking about UFOs. So we've been friends since then.
We know that Joe's the person that got you in. Or you've got Joe back in, I should say.
Yeah, I got Joe back
in. Yeah, you got Joe back in.
Back in the Phoenix Lights days, we used to talk about it all the time. You know, we used to talk about, and also, I mean, I used to argue because Joe was into sort of the some of the ancient alien stuff that I thought was kind of crazy. And I would argue with him about, you know, like when Joe was convinced the pyramids were built by aliens. And I was firmly opposed to that idea. I just kept saying, it's Stone Age technology, Joe. It's Stone Age. It's actually just stonemasonry. So if the aliens, I believe the aliens built it, if there was one electric light bulb in there.
You know? Right. Hey, and you're talking to the guy who's on Ancient Aliens, but I can say publicly, like, Dave, I'm with you, man. Like, we forget the ingenuity and the innovativeness of different cultures throughout the world and
And the pyramids of Giza weren't built like just let's build this. There's hundreds of years of progress. You can watch the progress. You can travel around Egypt and see it. It starts with burial mounds, then it starts with stepped earth pyramids, then it starts with stone stepped pyramids, then it started eventually gets to the smooth walled pyramids of Giza. I mean, but it took hundreds of years for them to figure it out. And you can you can actually walk around Egypt and see it. You can see the progress towards the pyramids.
But could it be? Could it be? No, I'm just kidding.
No,
we won't go there.
That the Nazis got the V2 advice from aliens. Oh, that's the other one that makes me crazy. Why would Nazis?
The DeGlocken.
Yeah, why would aliens show them how to build rockets? They have gravitic propulsion. Why would they, if they want to help the Nazis, why wouldn't they say, here's how you defy gravity.
Yeah. Yeah. Take our trash, take our, you know, thermodynamic rockets and good luck with that.
The aliens just show them how to use 1,000-year-old Chinese technology.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Let's move to, I mean, a lot of the stuff you brought up that got you interested is, through documentaries and kind of the entertainment industry and how they have handled this topic, whether it's through mainstream media or through Hollywood.
You're saying I'm not a reader. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not.
No, that's fair.
What's your favorite UFO?
I'm dyslexic, so I'm not a great reader. Leslie Kane's book I really loved. I read that. And I finally got around to, now that I'm not being cynical anymore.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah, that's a fantastic book. I finally got around to reading The Day After Roswell, which I guess I had kind of dismissed. Yeah, Philip Corso, which I dismissed for years. And finally read it and went, it's so much more rational than it's made out to be. It's so much, you know, he's like, none of his claims seem outrageous. You know, when you actually when you're not reading the people describing his claims.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I haven't made my way through the entire book yet, but you're right, a lot of the stuff that he says, there could be some truth to it, and you know unfortunately, like everything else with Roswell, we'll probably never truly know, but
it's not like he was saying we got all these technologies from UFOs. He was saying his job was to find areas where people were doing research in various material sciences where some of the materials recovered might have helped push that research forward. You know, he's not saying, he just said, hey, here's fiber optics. Go ahead and make $1 billion.
Good luck. Yeah. Exactly.
I actually spoke to Paul Hilliard about that. Yeah, I spoke to Paul Hilliard before, like years before he passed, about 2 years. And he read that book, and that's what got him into the story as well. And he actually looked at his background because he was the Minister of Defense. And then he was also going to be running to be the prime minister against Trudeau. And that was Pierre Trudeau, not our Trudeau now currently. Mm-hmm. But he then read that book when he was on vacation and someone gave it to him. And then that's what brought him in. But his parallel timelines said that it made sense for him. So when he read it, he went, I know, he knew the Kennedys, he knew everything that was related. So for him, it made sense. And when you get, you know, anybody that's in defense saying that their timelines match up with what the book says, you kind of have, you know, and he obviously knew more intel than we would ever know at that point too.
Yes. So, and then you just look at Phil Corso. He was so highly connected, you know, and so highly respected. And and as I said, and even you read the book, it's a very, seems like a, it's a very pragmatic account of how we took, I got this stuff. I got it. I'm supposed to hand it out. That's my job. Yep. And he lists all of the you know, all of the key players that he was in contact with and that he dealt with. You know, so he's pretty detailed in the you know, in the, you know, the personnel that he cites.
Yeah.
Christy, why don't we head into the entertainment territory, because I know this is, you know, kind of what you guys chatted about on your show with Dave, but I'd love if we could expand on that conversation a little bit in terms of the entertainment industry. And, you know, I know Dave is, you've done some stuff on television.
I'm a professional entertainer.
You are. You've done just a few things that people might know you from. But yeah, Christy, please take it from there.
Yeah, we talked a lot about misinformation too, Dave, and ridicule, because I know that you started in the community and there was a lot of ridicule around it. Have you seen, like, what examples in entertainment that used ridicule that you thought maybe was creating misinformation within the entertainment industry? And then obviously led to mainstream.
Yeah. Oh, I think from the, when was the decision made by the Pentagon to begin publicly ridiculing and undermining the credibility of witnesses? That was like early 50s, right?
Yeah, back Project Blue Book days. Yep.
Yeah. So it was they went from a stance of, all right, let's investigate this stuff, to let's make it seem crazy and make everyone who talks about it seem crazy, and condition the public to that. And so so I would say, like, going back from the earliest, you know, I mean, television, radio, it was sort of, the atmosphere was created that all of the people who believed in UFOs were, you know, the lunatics who hung out in the desert, waiting for them to come down for, you know, to save us. So comedy, especially in those days, there was a strong tendency towards what I would used to call public domain comedy. You know, which is like, you know, every comedy show would do a scene where a drunk guy sees something crazy and then takes the flask out of his pocket and goes, oh boy, you know, so everyone would do the same joke, right, in those days. I think we've evolved a little bit from that. We've made comedy a little harder now. But at that time, so you'd go for the low-hanging fruit, the easy laugh. So if there was a story about UFOs in the news, everyone in comedy would tell their jokes, you know, whether it was Bob Hope or later, whether it was Johnny Carson, or later Saturday Night Live. And it just all went on. That smart, intelligent people immediately mocked the story, immediately mocked any witnesses, derided them, disparaged and disposed of them pretty quickly. Are you hearing these alerts on my computer?
No.
Then I'll ignore them. But yeah, so I think there was just, so comedians became an unwitting ally, I think, to the government in creating the narrative that all UFO encounters are the product of deranged minds, and forwarding the stereotype of the the hick in his camper in the middle of the woods, you know, with his bottle of moonshine, seeing a UFO, you know.
Yeah.
And I got to say, to a certain extent, I mean, that social conditioning is one of the things that has amazed me most since, I guess, even since, particularly since the New York Times article, is the profound effect that the social conditioning has had on the population. That even now, when you've got the Pentagon coming out and saying, yes, they're real, you know, no, we don't know what they are. the response of the public is still largely, right, that stuff's crazy. I don't even want to talk about that crazy shit, you know, and just going on with their day. Well, whatever, whatever, freak, you know. And I know, and this is from particularly from intelligent people who actually are, as I said, I have friends who I know read the New York Times from cover to cover. But when I ask them about the, you know, these UFO revelations from the New York Times and the three famous videos that came out along with it, people I know read the New York Times, we're going, what are you talking about? Well, when was this? This was in the Times? I didn't see that. And you realize it's the social conditioning that literally, not only did they not read the articles, they didn't register that they had seen the articles because they're so conditioned to just block out anything to do with UFOs. And right.
Even if it's on the front page.
Yes, even if it's on the front page. And you know there's no way they missed it. But yeah. They did. Smart yeah. people that I know, I could talk to them about everything else that was in that issue of the New York Times. You know? And people that friends of mine that are comedians, that are extremely tied into, you know, the culture. Just zero awareness of the fact that the story had broken and that the Pentagon had confirmed it. And that startled me. And I kept thinking, wow, it really is this a larger danger to be aware of, which is how susceptible we are to having our, our field of view narrowed by social conditioning.
Yeah, and through media and entertainment. I had the same thing, too. I had a friend where I was visiting them in L.A., and we were all chatting, and I said, I'm like, yeah, we have, like, a, you know, UFO office, and you could watch their mind just, like, poof, like, just explode, and they're like, what? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, we haven't been catching up. Apparently, you don't watch any of our work, but that's fine. You know, I've mentioned it a couple times on social, but whatever. And I could see her mind just expand, and she's like, I need to know more. And it was great because I'm like, okay, well, great. Like, I've opened up your mind and the door now to learn a bit more. But for her, it was like, okay, now this is acceptable. So
yeah,
interesting to see her perspective, and then. And now what she'll probably teach her kids and everything else that's going to happen in the years to come, right?
So. Yeah, I know. And I mean, because it is, I mean, I do keep coming up against this where you just talk to people. And you see, I used to have a friend in high school who joined a cult. And the cult he was in, they was largely based on meditation. But they had him conditioned that if you questioned any of the beliefs of his cult, that he would lapse into a trance. So you'd ask him a question about his cult, and you'd be sitting on the bus talking and having a fine time, and then you'd ask him a question he didn't like, and he would go. And he would just stay that way until you backed off. And it struck is just unbelievable that you could condition someone to respond that way to information that they don't like.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
That's exactly the response I'm seeing from the people I would consider to be my peers in the world, which I would say are, you know, the smart, left-wing, intellectual sort of crowd that I wrongly believe I'm part of. And that crowd, when it comes to UFOs... are the same thing. As soon as you present them with these ideas, they don't want to hear. You know, they go into the trance of just not listening, not hearing. You can see the eyes glaze over, and it's a chilling effect, and that none of us should ever think that we've escaped it. Even if we've escaped it, maybe on this one subject, there are probably numerous other subjects in which we've been totally. Shut down from thinking about things. Obviously, religion's great at doing it, at shutting down thought. And politics, adherence to any sort of political party or philosophy can do it as well. But for us, I think it's the most susceptible group in the world, I think, are people who consider themselves to be intellectuals. And I think, you know, even I think it was, as I said, like Noam Chomsky and manufacturing consent talked about how, you know, that you don't need conspiracies in the left. All you need to do is create an environment in which it's not acceptable to think about certain things. And the left wing intellectuals will adhere to those rules. Absolutely. And you will not shake them off of those rules about what you are and are not to think about.
Interesting. Yeah, you do, I think, tend to see a lot of more right-leaning people in this topic of UFOs, this sense of a distrust in the government and whatnot. And again, like, I'm not here to, you know, say what's right or what's wrong in terms of
where that's people my job. Lay.
Yeah, that's your job. Dave, yeah, you're the one who's going to alienate our audience, not me. Yeah. No, no pun intended. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I think, you know, as a, also a, and my viewers and listeners know this, as a more left-leaning person, they always ask me, how is it dealing with a community who's mostly, a lot of them don't have the same beliefs as you? And I'm like, hey, look, if this one topic is the thing that I can, like, have a civil discourse with them about, so be it. Maybe that'll open the door to other things, or maybe it'll make it worse. I've yet to see any results from that, but I don't know. It's such a profound topic. You would hope it could transcend all of that. You would hope.
I hope so. It should. It's certainly, I think, and again, I think that's part of why the left dismisses this, because they, you know, again, it's part of the cliche, the, you know, the crazy rednecks and their, you know, in their prepper bunkers, you know, so that, you know, it all gets lumped into one thing, as opposed to, you know, maybe these people with their mistrust of the government at least left them open to hearing this information. You know, it may have closed them off from hearing a lot of other important information, you know, you know, like about vaccines and stuff, but at least it opened their minds to this bit of information, whereas the left, that are by and large, you know, our minds are closed to this subject, you know, and our heroes, our scientists are mostly closed to it. It's changing now. It is changing. I just watched, I'm trying to remember the name of the, it was a podcast, it was Eric Weinstein and Hal Puthoff were on a podcast recently with I guess a guy who's sort of a, I don't know if he's like a protege or student of Eric's. I don't know, but I forget the name of his podcast. It's pretty good, but it's mostly a podcast about science and mathematics. But he's moved into the UFO discussion and dragged Eric Weinstein into it, still kind of kicking and screaming. But even Eric Weinstein is accepting the reality of UFOs now, and he's at a place where I think I was a little while ago, where he's accepting reality of UFO phenomena, but absolutely dismissing any possibility of like the abduction phenomena, which I gotta admit, I feel bad. I actually dismissed that as well for a very long time. Which logically doesn't make any sense, because if you accept that UFOs are here and that there's a strong possibility that they're extraterrestrial, it would seem kind of stupid if they weren't abducting us.
It's hard day for someone who has spent half my life interviewing experiencers and claimed abductees. You know, I can't even pretend to be closer to an answer of whether these abductions are happening in the physical realm as we know it, or if they're happening at all. All I can do is, you know, continue to ask questions of these people and at least listen to them, you know. Yeah. I think it's everyone deserves to at least be heard when it comes to these topics.
Just seems absurd to dismiss it once you've accepted other, like once you accept one premise, you know. And in fact, I remember Eric Weinstein in this podcast was all upset about the idea. He said, well, you know, we can't, just because we accept this doesn't mean we open the door to everything. You know, just so we accept that the UFOs, these ships are existing, doesn't mean we open the door to, you know, abductees. And it's good. Why doesn't it? mean, you know, once you've...
At least, keep the door ajar.
Start.
Keep the door open.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And you can start the conversation.
Yeah,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know, I think we're dealing with right now the mainstream now accepting UFOs exist. Like, just that question, you know, with the United States government saying, yeah, there's a physical phenomenon happening. We still don't know what it is. But, yeah, it's real. We're going to we want people to report it. We'll look into it. It's a lot to ask them to then believe in abductions. And by that, I mean the mainstream public. Yeah. But, you know, maybe there will come a time where we get there. It's just not right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's like this counterculture group that's growing. You know, there's apps now that if you're in that community, you can go and talk to people and share conversations. And the ridicule is not, it's still there for, I think, for, you know, adoptees and like contactees. But they feel, I think, a little bit easier and lighthearted that they can come out and talk about it more freely. And so you're getting more of those people happening. So I think once we start figuring out what's going on here, we'll probably, there is no choice for that discussion not to happen, but it's probably going to take, I don't know, another 5 years, I would imagine. You know, I might be wrong, but I think it's going to take a little bit longer. And also science will have to catch up to that too.
I hope so. For the basis, just for the out of empathy for the people who have had these experiences. Yeah. And just the sheer volume of people who've had these experiences, it just seems close-minded and condescending to just dismiss it all. You know, I mean, let's obviously, probably most of the accounts are not true, and there's certainly a certain amount of mental illness involved in the phenomena, but there's a certain amount of mental illness involved with everything. So we don't dismiss everyone who believes something just because some of the people who believe it are crazy, you know.
Are which cases, Dave, may I ask, do you buy into when it comes to abductions? I get asked that a lot, and you know, I kind of always turn to the quintessentials, you know, the documented ones and whatnot. But I've spoken to hundreds of people, so I'm going to have a different answer from other people. Which ones would you say?
I mean, obviously, I think the Travis Walton one is one of the most compelling, you know, in terms of just, you know, the amount of documentation and corroboration and the fact that he's stuck with the story all these years. And, you know, and I think the Betty and Barney Hill is pretty compelling. Yeah. And I also, you know, also friends who have had abduction experiences, and I believe them now, and I didn't at first. So I would say, probably the two big famous ones are probably the ones I know the best. I've also read some of David Jacobs books.
Oh, right. Yes.
A little bit about Hawk and stuff. And of course, Harvard psychologist.
Oh yes, John Mack.
Yeah. Right.
John Mack.
Both went to Harvard. You were not far off.
Right. It was
Harvard.
Like
yes.
It's like yeah, the teach at Harvard.
Yeah, right. John Mack. And he did a great documentary years ago about experiencers that was pretty kind of chilling and compelling.
He brought it into the mainstream too with Oprah and so many other people talked about it because of John Mack. And for him, you know, he shed a lot of light on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and he almost sacrificed his career for it.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. I know. They tried to get rid of him. It's crazy. I know. I think it came to like a lawsuit at one point. But it's crazy to me to think too, like Mack was one of the first people on the ground at that Zimbabwe case. Back in 94, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah.
And now, like, who knows what kind of preserved evidence we would have had he not gone there and, like, interviewed all these kids who had this crazy close encounter experience at their school. We probably never would have really known about it had he not been there. And Cynthia Hines, the investigator who actually originally investigated that case, we really have her to thank. But again, John was like, yo, I'm on a plane, I'm getting to Zimbabwe, I gotta interview these people. Like, that says something when a Harvard psychiatrist is willing to do that.
And I'm trying to think, has that documentary come out yet? I know there was a documentary in the works.
Not yet. They're supposed to come out.
Zimbabwe event.
I think it was supposed to come out this year or last year, but they've been holding on to it. Yeah, I'm excited.
The footage that James Fox has in his documentaries from John Mack and the Zimbabwe kids is pretty you know, pretty amazing.
James is working on another documentary too. That has a similar, I'll just say, appeal from what I've known and what I see on his Facebook that he's sharing. I don't know when it's going to be released, but it's going to be exciting too. I think it has a very similar feel to the phenomenon, but more in depth and something similar to the Aerial School event. So,
And I would say for one thing, a documentary that I don't think a lot of people know is The Secret History of UFOs, which is a Canadian documentary. Mm-hmm. And I'm forgetting the name of the filmmaker because I'm old.
I've never watched that one.
It's amazing. I found some people had trouble getting to watch it because they found like the production style of it felt outdated. You know, whereas James Fox's stuff seems modern. But you know, but his was a very sort of casual, chatty. And he's a guy who used to do a documentary work for the Fifth Estate, which is Canada's 60 Minutes and The Nature of Things. So he was like a serious documentarian and journalist, and he did a really solid overview of the whole modern history of UFOs. But on top of that, he also on Amazon you can also find the addendums to it, which I think there's three addendums to it, and they're all at least 2 or 3 hours long, and it's just the raw interviews, you know, with people like Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and all the people that they interviewed for the movie. So that's I would cool. recommend watching the addendums. Just watching the raw interviews is pretty amazing stuff.
Hey guys, Ryan here. The Somewhere in the Skies podcast is a labor of love every week. And with that comes many different costs to keep the show running. That's where our Patreon campaign comes in. You give what you think the show is worth. There's different rewards available all the time, including shoutouts on the show, early editions of main episodes, bonus episodes and content, and very soon, monthly patron hangouts, where we sit back and chat all things UFOs. So I hope you'll consider becoming a Patreon subscriber today. To learn more and to join, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you for your support, and keep looking up. Do you like stories of the strange, the weird, and the unexplained? Then we want you to check out Jim Harold's Campfire. The concept is pretty simple. Jim talks to regular people about strange stuff that happens to them. And yes, that includes UFOs, along with cryptids, ghosts, and head scratchers. He doesn't exaggerate or play a lot of spooky music, kinda like I'm doing right now. The stories speak for themselves. One's like a ghost story involving serial killer Ted Bundy, or the young man who encountered an eight-legged demon. Then there's the story of an alien abduction by what could be considered a reptilian. Now, not all the stories are horrifying. Some are actually pretty heartwarming, like a visit from a past loved one or a peaceful near-death experience. Regardless, these are true and fascinating stories told by ordinary people who've had extraordinary experiences. Tune in to Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to Somewhere in the Skies. And remember, stay spooky.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, you know, since we're talking about Canada, Chrissy yes. just had on our show Vice contributor Daniel Otis, who just obtained over 20 years of Canadian government UFO files. Insane.
Yeah.
Like, of course, you know, the story would break now in the middle of like another pretty crazy time in our history. This seems to be a running theme when it comes to breaking UFO stories. But this is pretty stunning. The Canadian government gave him all of this. You know, he's been working on it for a really long time. So that's pretty cool. But, you know, Chrissy spoke to him, Dave, about this idea of the reason he was able to obtain a lot of these files from the Canadian government is because a lot of it is not classified like it is here in the United States, because they're not pinning this this threat potential to it, which will automatically increase the chances of something getting classified and never released. So, you know, Daniel spoke about
in Canada,
that.
In Canada, we don't worry so much about threat as, will they like us?
Exactly. Yeah. But, well, that's my question for you. Why do you think it is, you know, in Canada, there's this, you know, A, it hasn't been as big of a thing as it has been here in the United States. And B, is it because they don't take that threat kind of narrative that we are getting more from the Canadian government than we would from the United States?
But the weird thing is we're getting it now. But for all these years, no one's bothered to ask, I guess, is
good
the
point.
Weird thing about Canadians. Is it's just never, like, you know, we're, you know, it's all these, you know, people in the, you know, the U.S. who are doing constant Freedom of Information Act requests. It never occurs to Canadians to ask, you know, he'll think you're being rude. Don't ask the government something that might be secret. So Canadians are, you know, we have a tendency not to get as involved, I guess, in that sort of thing.
But definitely,
I don't think, we aren't a nation that thinks in terms of threats all the time, even though we live next to one of the most dangerous countries in the world.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, too, I was going to say, too, Daniel Otis tweeted today, and I brought it up. It says today, and this is movement, and it's probably because of Daniel's article that put some pressure along with what's happening in the States and the news media. But he wrote today, Parliament member Larry McGuire, MP, asked the government to prepare a written report on identified aerial phenomenon and security at Canadian nuclear facilities and to share the data with the new UAP program. So that's huge. It's huge. Yeah. And I tweeted, Daniel, I was like, that's probably because of you. Your article with Vice, and he's been doing a lot within the Canadian system. And I have a lot of respect for him as a journalist, because he literally said, he's like, I just asked, and nobody's been asking. So he just asked the right questions at the right time, he said. And I'm like, you know what? I'm glad you did. And he's a really wonderful journalist. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said, Canadians, we have a tendency to not, we're only now taking looks at a lot of the very dark parts of our history. And 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that was unheard of. We didn't, you know, Canadians didn't really, we were too embedded in being lovely, nice Canada to be very to examine ourselves very much. But it's also a big transition for Vice as a publication, since they were pretty derisive of the New York Times article and of the UFO story in general for the last couple of years. So it's nice that they're kind of, I guess, changing their stance and actually looking at the evidence.
I was just going to say too, I'm like, do you think that news media then is influencing politics? Because we're kind of seeing that. I'm going to say it's not 100% that Daniel Otis stuff is, but it kind of makes sense. You know, he comes out with an article and then a couple of days later, or not even a week later, this happens in Canada. So do you think that news media is affecting politics? And it could be around the world, or especially in the States.
I think it is. It's gradual, because the news media does tend to have such a herd mentality. So it's hard to get people to take on the story that nobody else is covering, because there's just an assumption, well, if no one else is covering it, it mustn't really be a story. So getting people to just sort of turn that ship around is slow. But definitely the media, I don't live in Canada, so I don't see as much of it, but I'll see clips online of Canadian reports on UFOs, and they're gradually, one by one, they all seem to be not playing the X-Files theme anymore. And that's my real gauge of the seriousness of the media is when finally we never hear the X-Files theme again, unless we're watching the X-Files.
Exactly.
Right.
Because it's automatically, because it is, it's almost like the Manchurian Candidate, where there's the trigger word, to set the Manchurian Candidate off. The X-Files theme was the trigger to turn off everybody's brain whenever watching a story about UFOs. You know, this is silly. sit here till it ends, though. Oh, it's over.
By Frank Spotnitz or whatever his name was. Christy, I have some really good listener questions for Dave that we got. So Kevin on Twitter asks,
I already don't like this guy.
Oh, really?
I already got a bad feeling about this fella. Go on. Come on, Kevin.
All right, I guess we'll read it. Yeah, let's hear what you got. First, Kevin, have you ever thought of doing a UFO ET abduction themed comedy, similar to, say, something like People of Earth on TBS, the show that unfortunately got canceled too soon? But yeah, have you ever thought of doing anything like that?
Yes, but then they made People of Earth, so I stopped thinking about it. And then People of Earth failed, so now I can't sell it to anyone else. It was a really good show. I liked it a lot, and I would have loved to have done a show like that. I would have loved to have been a guest on that show, but apparently me hinting about it didn't do any good. But no, it's hard. I mean, I would definitely like to do something on the theme. Yeah, I also really interested in doing something non-comedy on the theme too.
Right.
Exactly.
It would say a lot coming from, I think, someone like you who's known a lot for comedy. But I've, of course, like any artist, like there's other sides to everyone. And I think, this topic is starting to be taken more seriously. There was a short-lived show, I think, on ABC or CBS that was about wreckage that fell to Earth from a UFO craft. Then it immediately got canceled after like six episodes.
I didn't even know it got canceled. I was watching it. Yeah. It was pretty good. It was a pretty good show.
What was it? Debris. I was trying to think of the name of it.
It was an interesting take on sort of the material sciences avenue of the UFO story.
Yeah, I really wanted to see where it was going, but alas, there's always Netflix or Amazon or Hulu or endless streaming services it could go to. Well, here's another comedian who we love near and dear to our hearts here in the UFO community. Dan Aykroyd. No, he did not ask this question. I wish. Wow. But
I've never talked to Dan about UFOs. I would love to sometime.
That was the question.
Oh, have I talked to Dan Aykroyd? No, I have never talked to Dan Aykroyd. Although one of my very good friends is a man named Dave Thomas, who was one of the stars of SCTV, and who wrote the Dan Aykroyd movie called Spies Like Us, and is a brilliant comedian. One of the guys who inspired me most as a youngster. But I have talked to him about UFOs, and he's talked to me a bit about some of Dan's views on UFOs. I've certainly seen Dan's public work about UFOs over the years, but I've never had a Most of my conversations with Dan Aykroyd involve me trying to get him to remember that he's met me before. So that's, it never usually goes beyond that. It's always like, yeah, we have mutual friends, Dan, we've met before. And this is, excellent. Good work.
Yeah. Wonderful. All right. Have you tried my, what is it? Crystal Skull Vodka. Crystal Skull Vodka.
Yeah. He's an encyclopedia when it comes to UFO stories. I couldn't believe how many he knows. I remember watching his Joe Rogan interview and I'm like, what? I'm like, I never knew you knew so much about UFOs, Dan. Like, I knew he'd love the topic, but I didn't realize he could spit off almost every story. Like, he just, and it makes sense. He's a storyteller. You know, he makes sense that he loves them because the UFO stories are really great, or abduction stories are really great. Well,
and I believe he's kind of a spectrum-y genius and, you know, he has the tunnels in whatever he takes an interest in. He tunnels in and learns everything. He's one of those guys who just has this intense focus on whatever he's doing at the moment.
Right.
And so you can see where, you know, that he would just plow into it. And he's one of those guys, he just never care what anyone thinks about him, about anything. So, he was obviously way out ahead of the curve of big figures in popular culture.
I'm
talking about these things.
Absolutely. What about your friends over at the Kids in the Hall, Dave? Like, do they know about your fascination with this topic? What do they think about it? Have they ever brought it up to you, or have you?
I think they mostly politely ignore it. I think Scott Thompson's probably a little bit interested in it more than the other guys. Kevin's more interested in soccer. I don't think any of those guys are particularly into the subject. Scott a little bit, but that's about it. I think
that's fair, right?
Eric.
That's fair.
Well, Eric on Facebook asks, "What is your all-time favorite sketch from Kids in the Hall?"
Nice.
that's hard. I don't know if it's my favorite sketch, but it's a sketch that kind of sums up the whole attitude of the group. It's a sketch called Comfortable, which is a sketch about two couples having a polite dinner conversation. And after dinner, one of the husbands gets up and starts obviously trying to seduce the other man's wife. And everyone just comfortably goes on and goes, you know, surely you don't mind me doing this. You know, we're such good friends. And then it winds up with Scott picking up my wife, played by Kevin, and having sex with her on the dining room table while I explain to his wife that, this is fine because I'm impotent anyway. So
it's a gaslighting sketch.
Yeah.
I remember that one. Yeah. I remember that one fondly. Yeah.
So that's kind of almost a quintessential Kids in the Hall sketch.
I'm not sure if it's my favorite. You can make a... If you can make an American blush and uncomfortable watching sketch comedy, then I think you've done your job, Dave. And I definitely was when I saw that one.
And then, and because you also have the other layers of it being, then that's really two men on the table back there, not a man and a woman.
Right. And
So there's all layers. The gender blurring that we did back in those old shows was a big part of I love about the Kids in the Hall was that we once you bought into the show itself, you kind of, all notions of gender kind of just flew out the window. Gender and sexuality were all just became an amorphous cloud.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that. I love that. Dallas on Facebook says, "You're one of my favorites, Dave, from Kids in the Hall and News Radio all the way up through It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Such a big fan, super excited for this. Have you ever heard of things like the Big Phone Home? And have you ever considered the possibility of being a part of this kind of thing with your, you know, your celebrity status of trying to pressure either the U.S. or Canadian governments into taking this topic seriously and raising awareness?"
We were on the Big Phone Home together, weren't we? The podcast, the live podcast.
Luis's podcast. Was that the first time you were?
Is that?
I think so. With Jeremy Jeremy was on there, and
yes, that was with UFO Jane.
UFO Jane. Yeah. So I'm aware of, definitely aware of it, and have had a little bit of involvement in it, but I can't say that I'm deeply involved with it.
That's fair. No. That is fair, my man. All right. Let's see here. Oh, Brian on Facebook asks, what are your thoughts on UAPs as technological devices, either known terrestrial devices, extraplanetary, or as Terrence McKenna referred to them as, other tenants in the building yet to be revealed? What do you make of these UAP, Dave? What do you think they are?
My main thing is I think we can't think of it as being one thing. I think it's unlikely that all the UAP are one thing, or that there's one source for all of the UAP phenomena. I think some of it is nuts and bolts craft. First off, let's just put out all of the misidentifications and frauds. Mm-hmm. We'll ignore all that. The stuff that we can pretty much agree are interesting cases. Some of it's nuts and bolts craft. Some of it might be some form of conscious entities in terms of the spheres that people are seeing and the light spheres, and also just some of the abduction experiences might be less physical. I do think most of the abduction phenomenon seems to be a very physical event that happens in real time to people in the real world where they actually do go missing. So I think it is a real physical event. But maybe it's, I guess it's Jacques Vallée has long said that this is may have more to do with consciousness than technology. But I tend to think that at least a big component of it is technological, and I think the press and I guess the mainstream society still keeps clinging to the idea that unidentified doesn't mean alien, and it's probably you hear all these people coming out with zero reason to say it, saying it's probably dark projects, and certainly some dark projects may lead to some misidentifications, but I take the U.S. military at its word that these are not ours, these craft that they're seeing, and they are not Russian, they are not Chinese, and also people also often will cling to the word drone. They go, well, these are drones. Forgetting sometimes the military will say they seem to be drones, but by that they mean unmanned, whether by aliens or humans. That the craft seem to be often too small to have anyone inside them. So they refer to those as drones, but that is not an explanation for what they are. So people will go, I heard they said those triangles were drones. And yes, they did say that, but they also said, we don't know whose drones, where they're from. They don't function in the way that any drone that we know of can, but they believe they were drones simply because of what they perceive the size of them to be. I'm rambling on, but so I think some of it is nuts and bolts, and the notion that any other country has this technology is ludicrous, because I think we're seeing right now with the Ukraine, how limited we are in how we can respond to the challenges of the world we live in, that basically if a nuclear armed nation decides it's going to do something, we now kind of are looking at the fact of how impotent our traditional military equipment is in the face of a nuclear armed belligerent, and of course people can say the same about us, but here we're seeing the tragic outcome of not being able to fight, not having the tools to battle, because we're afraid of unleashing nuclear weapons. So as a result, we're allowing a large country to invade a small country and murder its citizens and flatten its cities. And we can do nothing about it. So if we had this technology, this wouldn't be happening in the Ukraine right now. And if the Russians had this technology, they wouldn't be invading the Ukraine right now because they would have already taken over the whole world.
Yeah.
Same thing as if the Chinese had this technology. We don't, you know, we would be living under the hegemony of either the Chinese or the Russians if they had this technology. And if we had this technology, everyone would be too afraid to move.
Yeah, I'm aligned with that. You know, I agree. The stuff that's going on in Russia, the stuff that's going on in Ukraine with Russia is a prime example of, you know, we know Russia doesn't have that tech for sure. You know, I'm still looking at China. They have a lot of stuff that's coming out in their defense side with planes. You know, they have something that's similar to like an SR-72 or SR-71 that's been coming out. I think just recently they released it. And the tech is something that I don't even think we have that we know. So things are happening on that side. But I agree with you. If they had it, they would be ruling the world already by now. You know,
everything including
China's going that way economically. So
yeah, and everything including like all black projects that have become public throughout the modern era, everything that's gone from being top secret black money projects to publicly admitted has only been incremental increases in technology. Nothing revolutionary has ever come out of a black project. Only slight incremental increases in abilities, you know, whether it's jets, you know, going from prop planes to jets, from jets to supersonic jets. We're still looking at a source of propulsion and lift surfaces and control surfaces. And essentially, there's no difference. There's no fundamental difference between the best jets we're flying today and what the Wright brothers put up in the air. The physics are exactly the same. We're just better at manipulating the physics than the Wright brothers were. So to think that we said that somehow there's a black project that absolutely eliminates inertia and apparently defies the laws of physics and time and space. And you have to assume that that's what the data is showing. So if somebody had that, there would be no reason to spend all the money that we're spending on pumping, you know, jet fuel out of the back of a glider, you know, which is all that everything is. Everything we have is basically just a paper glider with a better engine.
Well, let's wrap up the listener questions here, Dave, because we've got just a couple closing ones here.
All right,
for
if you hate your listeners, that's your business.
AI McC asks through email, Dave, why do you think these mother effers keep casting you for your voice roles when your face is clearly the golden ticket?
Well,
best question ever.
I don't know. Well, first off, I don't share your fondness for my face, and I've never understood people's fondness for my voice. I've always is a like most people, I think I hate the sound of my own voice, and when I hear it recorded, I go, my God, why would anyone hire someone that sounds like that? But I've come to realize over the years that apparently I have a distinctive voice, and I learned years ago that I'm almost impossible to impersonate.
Oh, wow.
Which is interesting, because I remember Disney at one point tried to hire someone to impersonate me for the Bugs Land at California Adventure. They tried to hire someone, and my friend John Lasseter, the genius John Lasseter, heard this recording of somebody trying to sound like me and went, that's not Dave, what? and got very mad at them and insisted that they hire me to do it.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Why don't you hire the original person?
Yeah.
I remember you telling me a story, Dave, about you doing an audition for it, and they were like, you're like, you already got it. And you're like, or like something to the extent that you were like, let's do this. Can you tell the story better? It's your story.
Yeah. It was one of the things. Well, first of all, I originally was going to audition for the part of the stick insect that David Hyde Pierce played. But I got bumped the day of the auditions because Carol Burnett came in. And I, you know, they said, do you mind Carol Burnett's here? And I said, of course I'll. Yes, Carol Burnett. She's royalty. Of course you take Carol Burnett before you take me. And so I had to go back to work at News Radio. And then they felt guilty about bumping me because that's the kind of people, you know, the Pixar people are. And so they let me come in to read for the Flick character instead. And I think they were just doing it to be nice. But they liked what I was doing so much that as we were talking, they started reshaping the character and going, yeah, well, the way he's doing it, yeah, the character could do this and this and this based on what I was doing in the audition. And at one point I had to stop them and say, guys, you haven't hired me yet. and they went, right, yes, well, we'll be getting back to you.
Right.
You know, so you've landed it when they're... Yeah, where they're molding the character around you during an audition. That's a good sign.
They were rewriting the script. I mean,
insert Dave Foley's face now and voice.
And that's my whole history of that company is that they don't function like other companies. They're just all about the art and all about just pursuing whatever ideas excite them. Which
that's
is
beautiful.
You know,
and it's good to hear. Yeah.
The fact that they've made billions of dollars doing that is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. It definitely says something. Well, Dave, hope for the future. We all need it right now in so many different ways, but especially with the UFO topic. What do you hope for in 2022 when it comes to this topic of UFOs, UAP? We've come a long way in the past couple years, but there's still a long way to go. What should we focus on?
I'm hoping we get to the point where whatever it is that Lou Elizondo clearly wants us to know he knows, but that he can't tell us, and that he keeps hinting at. I'm hoping that we get to the point where we can hear what those facts are. And I've also heard like Hal Puthoff intimate that there's some really big stuff that we don't know yet that is known. So I would love it if those knowns, because it's still going to be mystery, I think, but I'd love to have those knowns, those unknown, those known, those things that someone knows be something that we can all know. And then on the negative side, I think we also have to look at Ukraine. And for the people who think that the phenomenon is here to save us, you can look at the Ukraine and go, pretty clearly that's not something they're interested in doing. You know, because we're standing by and watching this because we have nuclear weapons and because they have nuclear weapons.
Yep.
And because we're all addicted to oil. And so those two things, our addiction to oil and our fear of nuclear war, are forcing all of us NATO allies to basically sit on our hands and wave a finger at Russia. And the aliens aren't gonna stop it.
History yet to be written. Well, I mean, on a brighter note, Dave, I you know, hopefully there's things we can look forward to. While you know, there always should be, and we hope humans can be resilient enough to do such. But in terms of what you're doing, my man, you are helping to legitimize a topic that has been delegitimized for a very long time.
Comedians have done a huge amount of damage.
But it's never too late to rebuild, and I think we're on our way when it comes to this topic. And I gotta ask before we go, when can we expect to see The Kids in the Hall and everything else you're up to, man, if you don't mind teasing?
Well, the new Kids in the Hall season, this is how we're referring to it, is season 6 of The Kids in the Hall. It's going to start on Amazon in May. I don't know the exact date, but it's going to be sometime in May. There's also going to be at South by Southwest in just in a matter of days now. We're going to South by Southwest, because they're going to premiere a two-part documentary that's going to be on Amazon as well, called, I think it's called Kids in the Hall, Comedy Punks.
Nice.
Yeah, although I like the original title better that Amazon wouldn't go for, which was The Kids in the Hall, Hard to Kill. which is a reference to one of our very early sketches where we had a line about a guy easy to beat up, hard to kill. I think it's called Comedy Punks now, and it's a two-part documentary on the history of the Kids in the Hall.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. Awesome. Dave, well, before we go, is there anywhere people can reach you to chat UFOs or just have a good old conversation with you?
I guess really just Twitter, I guess, really. I'm there a lot, you know. I'm trying to think if there's I guess there's nowhere else, really. Mostly Twitter. I'm on Instagram, but I rarely look at it. And Facebook, never. I only have Facebook so my Oculus works.
Yep, I know the feeling well. Yeah, it's amazing how quickly Facebook has become a relic now in the age of Twitter.
And speaking of my Oculus, here's a little tip for people out there. And if you're out there in one of them sort of chat areas in virtual reality and you run into someone like me, don't say you're old as shit.
Really?
Yeah. You know, as we get, oh man, you're old as shit. And I go, rude. Yeah, yeah. I said, well, I was pretty honest with my avatar. You know,
God
I wasn't
forbid.
Trying to hide it. I got my avatar's got gray hair. So have some manners.
Kids
VR
could be
people.
So mean. I know.
Yeah. It's, well, we'll see you in the metaverse. That's where we're going to see you next. Yeah.
Yes.
That's where we're heading next.
Yeah. We never get to touch on simulation theory.
No, right.
Oh, we didn't go there. We'll have to have you back to talk about it. You've been more than gracious with your time, my man. So
once again,
thank you. Thank you so much for coming on Somewhere in the Skies today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And again, I continue to enjoy both your work separately, and it's really fun to see you guys working together.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Cheers.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.